So, welcome everyone to the Ashland Park and Recreation Commission Ashland Senior Advisory Committee meeting, ASAC. This is our first live meeting probably since the beginning of 2020. So, welcome back everyone. And it was partially my idea to have a live meeting, and I apologize for the rain, but we probably need it. So I have a couple things in the opening this morning or this afternoon. And first I wanted to welcome Jim Bachman. He is going to be a voting member of our committee, currently a Ashland Park Commissioner, recently appointed, and I'm glad that Jim was able to join this group as liaison from the Ashland Park Commission. So,
thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate having you. And we welcome you with open arms. So
happy to be here.
And then the next thing I would like to do is just, as all of us know, we had a terrible tragedy that happened just here a month or so ago with the passing of Mike Hirsch, and I'd just like to take a moment of silence just to remember Mike and his contributions to not only to this group, but everything he did for Ashland as a volunteer. So just take a couple minutes or seconds. Yeah, Mike was an interesting character, and he'll surely be missed on this committee. But okay, then let's just jump into the meeting. We've got a fairly packed agenda today with RBTV here, as well as some other items that we need to get through. So first on our agenda is approval of the minutes from the March 14th meeting, and I would take a motion to approve unless there's any changes.
I move to approve.
Okay, do I have a second? Second from Ann. All in favor, you can just signify by raising your hand. Okay, very good. Minutes are approved. I don't have any additions or deletions to the agenda. I don't think Eileen does either. So we have 5 minutes for public input, but I'm not sure that Rob or Noriko are here to speak, so just observing. Okay, very good. Then we'll pick up a few minutes there. So next on our agenda then is the special presentation from RBTD, and I think I'll turn it over to Eileen for an introduction.
I'm going to drop my mask when I speak because So I want to welcome Paige West Townsend. Thank you so much for coming. Paige is with RBTD for just a little bit longer, I guess. Long tenure about to end there. But thank you so much for making the trip, Paige. I know you're all aware of the Ashland Connector pilot that was part of the state transportation improvement fund. That was a really exciting development for our community. It stopped last December, I understand, because of driver shortage. But I had been hoping that we could hear the outcome of how that pilot, get some statistics on that, and maybe get an update on what will come back. And as Paige has time available, she might tell us more about the other services that are available for older adults. This is just a critical part, a partner in transportation for older adults. And transportation is one of the major issues that we hear about for our community. So thank you, Paige.
Okay, well, and thank you for asking RBTD to come and provide some updates and information to you today. And wow, isn't it neat to be the first presenter in person in 2 years? Wow. Yes, as Eileen said, I have been working for Rogue Valley Transportation District since 2003, and I am going to be moving to the East Coast in June. Mm-hmm. So taking on a whole new life adventure, and I'll be teleworking through the end of the year, but there will at some point be an opening for a new senior planner position, so if you know anyone that might be qualified, please definitely alert them to that upcoming opportunity for helping with transportation in the Rogue Valley. So RBTD has several services that are often unknown, and so I'm going to be providing a little bit of information about that at the end, such as Valley Lift, which you probably are aware of, but we also have Valley Lift Plus. We also have TransLink, which is part of the Coordinated Care Organizations, the CCOs, which basically came out of Obamacare, and some other kind of intricacies with that. And so I want to make sure that you're aware of those. And of course, everything's on our website. So if you ever have any questions, go to our website. Certainly call us if you need additional information. And be happy to help you or family or friend, colleague, whoever, if you are an advocate and want to help people understand their options in the Valley. So I do have some ride guides here, if you wouldn't mind passing those around. And this is basically our entire route system. It is heavily focused on the fixed route system. There's information in there about our fares and other things, but it's really our fixed route system. Everything else would be online, and I'll be talking a little bit about it today. So Eileen is actually part of our FTIF funding program and project selection. She's the vice chair of our FIF advisory committee. The House Bill 2017, which was landmark legislation for the state of Oregon, it included millions of dollars for new transportation project funds, and it, for the first time, included sustainable fixed route transit funding. We were one of only a handful of states in the entire country that did not have dedicated revenue for fixed route transit. We have had paratransit, or our ADA service, funded through the state of Oregon for a number of years, but we, all of the transit providers around the state, there's about 42 of us, have been relying on local contributions, either through a property tax or even often the county or the city providing a portion of their general funds to help support and match any of the federal money that was coming in to our area. To give you an example, our neighbors to the west, Josephine Community Transit, which is operated under Josephine County, they did not have any local tax available to them. They were leaving money on the table. They were leaving federal money on the table because they did not have enough local money within their county to actually leverage all of the federal money that was available to them. With this new FTIF, Special Transportation Improvement Fund, it not only helps agencies like Josephine Community Transit, but also, of course, helped to expand transit across the state. It's a significant amount of funding, and it comes through a payroll tax. It's 0.1% of any person who is working within the state of Oregon contributes to this payroll tax. For RBTD, it's about $3 million a year. That's a lot. More than what we were expecting, honestly. And so we've been working towards expanding services since 2017. We had our first route enhancement that began in 2019. They actually didn't have the funds available to us because it had to go through the Department of Revenue, and then the Department of Revenue banked that money for about a year. And so in late 2018, they started to release the money to agencies who were providing transit. And so we had our funds coming in late 2018, and we started service in the summer of 2019 and have continued to expand up until the pandemic. And unfortunately, we've really had a hard time with getting drivers. So it's interesting because oftentimes when we're looking at why are we able to not provide transit service if we do have the money available, it's usually because of two things. most often it's because we don't have enough vehicles. And more recently, we have vehicles that are sitting in our parking lot available to be used because we don't have enough drivers. Mm-hmm. So you've seen the effects of that with the Ashland connector. And I'll be providing some information on what was really a successful pilot. We've done a tremendous amount of research across the country with these on-demand general public transit services, which are almost like an Uber or a Lyft. I mean, if you want to just think of it that way, that's basically what it is. It's an Uber or a Lyft, and it's very slick and convenient. So we've done a lot of research across the country before we launched the pilot and since then to understand how did it fare here. Did it work? Did it not work? But just to take a step back, out of that 3 million, we've identified several projects that we would like to fund, not only to start up, but then of course we need to sustain them over time. So we don't tend to put in service and then, you know, reduce it or cut it after a couple of years. And so there was a legislative change in 2020 that allowed transit agencies to sustain any of the routes that that new STIF money created. And so it's approximately 5 routes, if you want to think of it that way, 5 new routes. And we've put in, the East Medford service. So East Medford was the most populated area that did not have any service. Generally, if you know where Crater Lake Avenue is, north-south main thoroughfare, anything to the east did not have transit service. So we put in a new route over there. We also have the 1X that serves Medford-Ashland. It's an express route. It turns a 55-minute long trip one way into 30 minutes. So very convenient, especially for students. We did tailor that route towards Southern Oregon University, and so students are our highest use riders on the 1X express route. We also put in the Route 63, which goes to Eagle Point. Now, Eagle Point is not part of our district. We have a district much like a school district. We have our own geographic boundary. Eagle Point's not in that boundary, but part of the STIF money comes to the county, and any employees that pay into that tax outside of our district still deserve service, right? And so think Amy's Kitchen. Amy's Kitchen is actually not in our district. Neither is Eric's Air Crane. You know, so you have all this payroll that's being generated. So that's helped to support the Eagle Point route. And then we have Route 27, and that's on the west side of Medford, and then we also call it the Crosstown, and it connects to, 5 routes. So to transfer onto that route or from it saves you about 15 minutes of time instead of having to go all the way to downtown Medford, for example. We have service earmarked for the city of Ashland. What does that mean? Well, walking into this prioritizing of routes in 2018 and 19 when we were doing our planning, we've been working with the city of Ashland, and we had Scott Fleury, who you all know, and their staff worked with us to identify a new service. And so we came back to them and said, we can get a grant through the discretionary portion. They take 4% off the top, and they allow it to go towards special projects. If we wanted to try and do something called microtransit in the city of Ashland. Well, why would we do that? A bus cannot go above the boulevard. Never will. We have 30-foot buses as our smallest heavy-duty bus. We typically go 35 feet, especially in Ashland where we have high ridership, and those are not going to serve above the boulevard. And that's a significant portion of your population, right? And so we thought, well, you know, what about microtransit? Talk about smaller vehicles. And those can certainly go on the streets above Boulevard. So it makes sense to try this microtransit type of service. We then said we're going to get this funding. It's going to help us purchase the vehicles, the software system, and you know, some of the marketing, basically, that would go into the startup cost of this. And then we will also earmark project money in our normal SIF formula fund for the city of Ashland. So right now, the microtransit project has been that enhancement for your community, but it could go into a route that we've also planned if that's where the city would like to go. It can't pay for both. It's one or the other. At least it can't now. Maybe in 10 or 15 years, as we start to accrue additional STIF money, it could pay for additional enhancements, and it could have, you could have both. But right now, it's one or the other. And strangely, it costs about the same. It's about $400,000 for this Ashland Connector service, and it's also about $400,000 to put in a fixed route that would run Monday through Saturday, generally between the hours of 6 a.m. and 7 p.m. So to us, RBTV, we're like, we don't really care, because it's not going to take away from any other project. So where we're at today is we're hoping to bring the Ashland Connector back, but honestly, we need to start having these conversations with the city of Ashland and seeing what we want to do in the future. If we're not wanting to do microtransit, we can do the fixed route system. Okay, so let's dive into this project, the Ashland Connector. So this is a bar chart that goes back to January of 2020. It's the Ashland Connector started in December of 2019, like the week before Christmas. And then we suspended it in December of 2021. So you can see the growth over time, even during the pandemic, during those months where we had all of the variants that were coming in and the quarantining that was happening, we still saw very significant ridership and growth on the service. At the same time, our fixed route ridership dropped 50%, 60% on some routes. We're currently still at about, we're really only at about 3/4 of what we were pre-pandemic on our fixed route system. So this is even more interesting, that when we were seeing a drop in ridership on our fixed route side, we were seeing growth on the microtransit side. So during this approximately 2-year period of time, we saw just close to 16,500 completed trips. 62% of those were on the Rider app. And what's nice about the app is that, like Uber or Lyft, if you've used those services before, it's, you know, you do it in a couple of clicks. And then you also get the advantage of seeing the map of where the drivers are and where they are in proximity to you. The driver is also able to contact you if there's a problem. When you call in, so, you know, conversely, about 38% of the trips were booked by calling us. Once you hang up that phone, you are kind of left on your own devices to figure out how to make sure that you're at the right place at the right time. And if the driver's a little late, you're kind of like, you know, you've got the app, you know exactly what's happening. But this, because of Title VI and ADA, we will always provide a call-in option for people. They don't have to have the app. So when we ended this, we had 1,570 users. Those were people who were had at least taken one trip. And then 528 of those are recurring users, which means that they took at least 4 trips per month. So the software that you all see on your app, we have our own back-end software so that we can get some of the rider analytics and to understand what's happening in the system. We saw that there was about 11-minute wait time. This means not that when you booked your trip, you had to wait an additional 11 minutes. That means from the time you booked your trip. it would give you a slot that said, hey, we can pick you up in 11 minutes. Of course, you can choose to drive 3 o'clock in the afternoon or even tomorrow. You can, you know, you can book it way well in advance. We saw 23 average trips per rider. We had many riders that were using it every day, though, for especially for work. Average distance, 2 miles, you can imagine being within the city of Ashland, that's, that would be something that you would typically want to see. And then the customer service for this is that we were very reliable, so 97% of the time we were there to pick you up on the minute that you wanted to be picked up. 99% of the time we dropped you off when you expected to be. This is a heat map which essentially tracks those 16,500 trips and where the pickup locations are. So downtown, you can see there's a pretty good amount. There's also by the Albertsons and Shopping Cart and Weimar Shopping Center. We had a significant amount happening there. What don't you see though?
Upper
Boulevard.
Is that Mountain Meadows up in the...
It is. And interesting with Mountain Meadows, so if you looked at our ADA service, Mountain Meadows was originally not included in what we call the shadow, which is any area that's within 3/4 of a mile. Mountain Meadows fell just outside of it, and Skylark both. And so we decided to bring in the entire city limits is now part of our ADA area. So we want, because really what we didn't want is to have, this service would have been available to them, and we didn't want it to be the only service available to them, because that means that we would have been picking up several wheelchair trips, which does cause some friction for the rest of the system. So we wanted our ADA service to be available so that it would be a blend of both. But yeah, above the boulevard. I don't know why. I'm just, it's an interesting observation here. So we did just as much marketing up, you know, above the boulevard that people would have seen. So I just don't know. Same with drop-offs. So again, heat map, this is the 16,500 trips, where they concentrated. You can see some more here at the hospital, not the Ashland Hospital. But again, you're still seeing a lot of these concentrated areas. So we did a survey in October, November 2020, and we received 55 responses. Some of the things that we heard were that what was the purpose of the trip, and this was done on the app, so anyone, unfortunately, who had to call in their trip were not asked these questions. So this was something that popped up as a banner on your phone after you took your trip. We wanted to know, what were you doing, what was your trip for? We found that 33% of the trips were for commuting, followed by 19% shopping and 17% healthcare. We also found that less than half of the people who use the Ashland Connector had not used our fixed route system before. So this was essentially the first public transit experience that they had, at least with RBTV, was using Ashland Connector. They had not been on our fixed route service before. So that's great. We're bringing people onto general public transit because of this particular mode was more attractive to them to use. We also asked, what would you would have done if you didn't have Ashland Connector available, basically what mode was being displaced. And we found that private car was 6%. And this is a little bit less than what we see on fixed route. So our fixed route service, you typically see between 25 and 30% of the people who are using our fixed route service do have a car available to them. In this case, you see that it's more of a dependent ridership, people that we consider to only have friends, family, biking, walking, a taxi available to them. And so this was huge, because it's much less expensive. It's only $2 to use Ashland Connector compared to a taxi, which, you know, by the time you've gotten your pick and your drop rates, it could be Is that a bird?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a little bit.
Oh, good. Okay. So it's a much more affordable option. We did find that walking was also a displaced mode, and we have now demographics. So this is by age group and how many boardings people took on the right-hand side. So no transit, which means let's look at the far right-hand side. That's 75 and older. 25% said that the type of trip that they took, no transit would have been available to them. Because we know where all the origins and destinations are, and we also know the age and demographics of the folks and how they took their trip. And so with the green, it means one boarding. So they would have been able to fulfill their trip with one boarding. If you look at the left-hand side, you can see 18 to 24-year-olds. Half of those trips would not have been able to have been made by transit. So it wasn't reasonable for them to get to or from their destination.
So is that SMU students, or do you have any sense of how many of them were using, how many of the SMU students were using the connector?
I don't, but SOU students are about 10% of our fixed route ridership. It's very high. And they have a bus pass program available to them. And they're kind of concentrated too next to the campus. So I think these would be, you know, maybe teenagers who are still living at home with their parents who would have been able to use it. We also see a slightly higher female on the transit system, on the connector. That typically is a little bit less, but when we did as a side note, we also did an online survey for our passengers on the fixed route system. 95% of the respondents said that they had used RVTD in the last 3 years, so we know that they were not just anyone going on our website answering it. And females shot up. Because if you think about who was working and the essential workers, you've got janitors, you've got nurses, you know, you've got kind of that group of jobs is often women heavy. That's just a side note. 14% of the riders were seniors. 22% claimed that they have a disability. And we have both of the vans are now lift equipped. We originally started off with just having one van lift equipped, and the Federal Transit Administration wanted us to do an analysis to see if there was a longer wait time for someone with a disability, because either vehicle could pick up you and me and everyone in this room, but if you are all the way across town and you had a wheelchair and the one wheelchair-equipped van was on the other side of town, you now have to wait a little bit longer, and we did in fact find that wait time was up to 15 minutes. And so we went ahead and invested in putting another lift on the second vehicle to try and eliminate that problem.
Did people stop using Valley Lift or some of the other medical transport systems when this became available and there was the lift option?
They did. The fare is less, so it's $4 to use Valley Lift. It's $2 to use Ashland Connector. So just from a fiscal standpoint, they started to use this. The caveat to that is that the driver of the Ashland Connector is much like the driver in the fixed route system. They do not get out of the vehicle to assist unless they're just trying to get the lift down. Our Valley Lift drivers will actually bring you often to the door and from the door and help you and assist you to and from the vehicle. So if you had a disability that was a little bit more ambulatory and didn't require as much assistance, this was a good option for you.
And do you have any sense of how Uber or Lyft was impacted by the service?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
Are those still running?
I don't
in
know.
In town?
Yeah, definitely so.
Yeah, okay. We did have a board member, not a board member anymore. He was a driver.
Oh.
And he was the single vote that did not want us to put the turbot. Exactly. We kind of called him on that. We're like, this is a conflict of interest for you. But it's 6 votes yes, 1 vote no. We proceeded. Oh, so this is just a budget breakdown. Of course, now it's different because I've explained that we have the services all set up and ready to go. Our vehicles are here. But we did need additional funds for the startup costs. And so this discretionary grant that we received helped with paying for the startup costs. I'm going to pause here to see if there's any questions. And then I've got 3 more slides on our other services.
That'd be good, because we'd like to kind of wrap it up in about 10 minutes or so, so we can see. So any questions for Paige?
Senior discount for $1?
You do get a reduced fare on the Ashland connector.
I've ridden the connector. I love it, and I can't I use the app, and I can't remember if I even set it up to get that discount, but yeah, it's a great service.
We just have an eligibility process that you go through, and you can use your reduced fare pass.
Mm-hmm.
On our vehicle. And so there is a way to have the fare paid for in the app, but we did not want to do that.
Okay.
It would make it kind of a seamless system. But we decided to stick with our it's a UMO touch pass reader that we have in our fixed route system.
Can I just take a moment to add a little bit from our perspective? Most of you know, but maybe not all our new members, that we have bus passes through RVTD, but they're actually provided, paid for by the Public Works to bring some riders up the street, bring those car trips down. And it's wonderful that when you started this, it's the same pass that people use on the fixed route bus. And so we are able to give those same 20 ride passes, and people could use them on Ashland Connector and on the bus. And just anecdotally, in response to your thing, Anna, how does that affect Uber and Lyft? The folks that we see, this became an option because of the low cost.
Yeah.
That $1 fare, even when they're paying their own, but also knowing they could get some rides from us. That those weren't people who were really considering or able to use Lyft. And the other really big part for our audience is that phone line, being able to book over the phone and not have only people who can master the technology.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a huge hit. And through Graph, I felt like we heard from people in about that proportion. You know, we did a lot of promotion at first, but more and more people we started to hear from were using the connector. Very, very, very useful for our audience.
Good.
Anne, did you have another question?
Well, actually, Sandy and I have been sort of, they're wanting the state transportation plan wants input, and I don't know whether they're making any overtures to include you all in this call, which I believe is tomorrow at 10, from 10 to 11. I mean, it just seems like I'm not going to be able to do it either. But it's like the transportation plan
yeah.
for the state, and
mm-hmm.
you know, who's giving input? You know, that's
need some input from you.
So the Oregon Transportation Plan is what's being updated right now, and there's also a public transportation plan that was adopted in 2018, and I was a participant on the technical advisory committee for that. And so the OTP, the Oregon Transportation Plan, is like, you're right, it's kind of the overarching one. A lot of it's the funding, and then they try to project any congestion on corridors. They're probably going to tackle the I-5 bridge over to Washington, and also tolling. So there's some big items in there that they're going to have to talk about. But then they have other plans. There's a bike and pedestrian plan. There's a freight plan. So there's kind of these other offshoots where they do address more specifically our concerns.
Okay. Well, mainly I was wondering how, if there's a need for advocacy. I mean, it's a focus group, but, you know, obviously if they're making plans, if they don't think anybody cares, you know, if there's something that we should be trying to input to that.
Sure. Well, I guess from the senior's perspective, from the senior center's perspective, you might want to look at the equity for things like tolling and the pay-as-you-go type of insurance and registration that they're considering. I don't have the answers on whether those are good or bad for you, but those might be some of the things you want to discuss. And just lastly, I'm going to leave this particular topic and then I'll go into the others really quick, is that this was very successful. So in looking at other microtransit projects across the country, there is a passengers per revenue hour is usually our very basic way that we look at not only fixed route ridership, but also microtransit ridership. So passengers per revenue hour is just what it is, for how long that vehicle's running over the day, how many passengers were served. And you can maximize that over a week, a month, a year, whatever. But the average of what they would consider to be a healthy level is anything over 3. And we were averaging 4. Now, to put that into perspective, on our fixed route ridership side, a healthy transit route in our system, you know, it's not Chicago or New York or one of those, but in our area, smaller system, it's around 17. So yes, it costs $400,000 if we do a fixed route service, and it also costs $400,000 if we're doing microtransit. One of them, you're going to get a much lower ridership. You know, to expect it to serve 6, 7, 8 people, not going to happen. Our fixed route service will be more closer to 17, and that's okay. And I think it's okay because of the type of passengers that we're serving and why we're serving them and how they would get around otherwise. So it's a heavier investment, but it serves a different purpose. Okay, so really quick, our fixed route service, you probably know most of this already. We have 13 routes that serve Monday through Saturday. We have a $2 fare for our full fare passengers, a $1 fare for those who are eligible if you're an older adult or a person with a disability. We do allow service animals on the bus, and we currently serve Ashland, Talent, Phoenix, Medford, Central Point, Jacksonville, Eagle Point, and White City. The Valley Lift service is a service that is for those who cannot use our fixed route service, either because they're too far away, in proximity, and due to their disability, they're restricted. And so some of them are conditional eligibility, so oftentimes we see higher eligibility statuses in the colder months and then definitely in the hotter months for those who cannot sit outside at a bus stop when it's 100 degrees outside. We allow them conditional eligibility to use the Valley Lift service. We operate that service at the same time as our fixed route system, so the hours are the same. And we do allow a personal care attendant to ride for free to help the individual with their trip. Okay, and then I also mentioned we have something called Valley Lift Plus. Valley Lift Plus is provided through the Oregon Health Authority, OHA, and they work hand-in-hand with our Valley Lift administrators, and they identify individuals who are already using our Valley Lift service who may need an additional 3/4 of a mile. And so OHA determines who's eligible for that, not us. And they also compensate us for those trips. And so it's actually now a mile and a half. So if you live within a mile and a half now of fixed route, and you are qualified under OHA, our vans will now go out to meet that person. And it's been tailored more for people who are sheltered at home
and they need to get out. They need to go to a senior center and socialize, right? Getting to meal sites, you know, so OHA has considered it to be much more cost effective to keep that person in home than it would be to now pay for that person to go and work and live in an assisted living home on the state's dime. So that's a really unique service that I think was good to highlight. And then our last service is the TransLink service. This is a medical-only trip. It's what we call non-emergency medical transportation. It's often through Medicaid, Medicare, and the CCOs, the Coordinated Care Organization. So if you are an OHP client of any age and you need assistance with a medical trip to go to a doctor, you qualify for free transportation using TransLink. And we serve multiple counties within Southwest Oregon, not just this one. So common trips would be, for example, taking someone from Cave Junction all the way into Grants Pass, or even from, you know, Coquille up to Coos Bay to be able to access a specific type of care that they wouldn't otherwise have in their community. This is an eligibility process just by verifying really that you are part of a CCO or OHP, and then there's a brokerage service that happens to provide those trips to you. So, and then here's our contact information. Of course, Eileen has our information, and we do provide travel training. Our travel trainer is Mike Bowman, and he will provide personalized or group travel training people who want to learn more about the Six Travel service. So that's his contact information there. That's all I have.
I have a quick question, if you don't mind. What's the process to qualify for Valley Lift Plus? Is that through OHA rather than through Valley Lift?
It would start with us, and then we would contact OHA and basically work with them to determine the eligibility. And it typically is a certain number of trips, I think 4 trips per month or 4 trips per week, just depending on the individual and the care that they need.
Yeah. Other questions for Paige? Well, really appreciate the presentation.
That was
very informative. And it sounds like the city has some decisions to make then moving forward with the type of service that will be available.
That's right. And, you know, I think having the Ashland Connector going for another couple of years would have been my preference so that we could really get some good data and understand how it's being used. Are we getting anyone from above the boulevard? And if not, that makes the conversation different. So, I would like to see that we're able to get enough drivers so that we can continue with that service. Our plans are to continue it. We're just really waiting right now to be able to hire and train.
So is it running right now, the Valley?
The Ashland Connector is not running.
It's not running because you don't have enough drivers.
Right.
Okay.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay.
And if you don't mind, I am going to go ahead and head back.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Great. Thanks so much.
Yes, that's great.
Good luck on your move to the East Coast.
Yeah, it's exciting. Something new.
There you go.
All right, thanks, Eileen.
Thank you, Paige. And maybe you could send me your slides and I'll share them.
You bet.
That's on the
East Coast. Yeah, well, we're going to South Carolina, so it'll be very different.
Well, that's where Stephen Colbert is from.
There you go.
Okay, thanks, everybody.
Okay, thanks, Paige. Appreciate it. All right. Okay, very good. Move on to item number 6 on our agenda today, which is the election of ASAC officers for the coming year, which is July 1st, to June 30th of 2023. There hasn't been a lot of interest in being an officer on this group, but I did tell Eileen that I'm more than willing to continue on as the chair of this group for another year, and I did try to twist Deborah's arm to consider a vice chair position so that we can have two officers for the coming year. Basically, this is what the chair or the vice chair is going to do, is to facilitate meetings, to work with Eileen developing the agenda. But to be honest with you, Eileen usually has a pretty good idea of what the agenda could or should be, and it's usually just another voice to come up with the final draft. So there's not a lot of heavy lifting to do, but it is critical, and it's important that we, you know, that we have some leadership. You know, technically the chair would appoint work groups within our group. You know, we only have a couple right now, but you know, it's kind of a work with the superintendent, work with Natalie to, you know, to make sure that our bases are covered and that we not only carry on with the meeting, but we do whatever special projects that we also have. So that's a long way of me saying that I'm willing to chair the meetings again, and kind of just reaching out to Deborah to see if you'd be willing to vice chair for the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I am willing to vice chair. My concern was that if for some reason, mainly because I'm looking for employment, if for some reason something happens where I can't serve, I can't be here, then I would need to step down. But you know, I have no idea that kind of priority comes first. So yeah.
Okay. I don't know if we need an official vote. It's more like we step forward or we stay in place and everybody backs up. But go ahead, Eileen.
I think as a formality, you should ask the question, does anybody else want to run? And then we should just do a vote on for the chair and then the vice chair.
Okay, well, I'll ask if anyone else cares to run for either of the positions, and depending on what the response is, then I would ask for a motion to appoint chair and vice chair.
I make a motion to appoint Mike Gardner as chair and Deborah Johnson as vice chair.
Okay.
I second.
Second that. I don't believe there's really any discussion, but thanks for that.
Two good people.
So let's just have a show of hands for the motion. So all in favor can say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? It's unanimous. So, okay, very good. Thanks a lot, and we'll carry on for another year, and I think also we'll be just looking at special groups that we might need to form over the coming year, but at this point I don't really know what other special things we have to do. So it should be painless. So, okay. Let's move on to item number 7, which is the budget update. And do you want to give an introduction, Eileen, or do you want me to just turn it over to Michael Blair?
Well, Michael's going to give us essentially the introduction of it, and then we rolled, just for in the interest of time, Steph's liaison report and Jim's liaison report. It's just going to be one discussion because they've been all about budgets the last many meetings, and there's more stuff about budget. So hopefully most of you remember our early discussions, and Michael can just focus on the latest here.
Okay. So like she said, I'll just focus on the latest, but I'll give you a little bit of background first. Ashland Parks and Recreation is a pretty robust group, and the Parks and Recreation Commission has been around since 1908, and it's formed by charter. There's 5 elected commissioners, and the charter is very specific in that it states that the commissioners have control and management of of all the resources of Ashland Parks and Recreation, including land, money, wherever the money is coming from. When it comes into Ashland Parks and Recreation, it's the commissioner's job to decide how it was spent. And I think they've always done a really good job, and I've tried to help them with that. And what we do is we try to balance which programs get subsidized heavily, if you will, or which programs get most of the general fund dollars and which programs are required to earn revenue. For instance, the senior services program is for next year's budget is about $400,000. And $16,000 of that will come from revenue, maybe. And the rest of it will come from the general fund. So it's very heavily subsidized general fund, whereas, say, like the ice rink, which is a great program, brings people into town, but it's not subsidized at all. It actually covers 100% of what its expenses are. The swimming pool is different, the golf course is different, the nature center is different, so on and so forth. So the commissioners decide how that money gets allocated. And the way the money comes to the commissioners is through a couple of sources. One of those is revenue from recreation. So if you sign up for a class through the senior services division, or if you sign up through recreation at the swimming pool or even at the ice rink or the golf course, all of that money would go into recreation, except for the golf course, but that's kind of splitting hairs. But then there's money that comes to us from renting gazebos and renting out. When we used to be able to rent the community center out, we could get revenue for that. And renting the Grove and weddings that could take place at Oaknall and things like that. You know, we do get revenue from those things. A couple of other areas that we get revenue from, the City of Ashland pays us to maintain the non-park lands that are along the boulevard. We maintain the center median strips, and then the airport, and Briscoe Elementary School in the front, which is a city property, and the back is park property. So since we're already there maintaining the park, we maintain the front, and we do get some money in return for that. That's fees for services, and then we also rent out the fields, soccer fields, baseball fields, softball fields, and our biggest contributor for that is Ashland High School, which uses most of the fields down at North Mountain Park for their varsity and junior varsity softball and baseball. Used to be more soccer, but now that the fields are in at the stadium, they do a lot more soccer at the stadium. So I'll run through the other areas really quick. Food and beverage is the money that comes in through when you go out to eat and you get that tax. That money, generally, we used to get about 25% of that. It was 20, then jumped up to 25%. And that money would pay for major projects like that playground outside and putting in new parks and things like that. In the last year, though, the council did vote to allow us next year to use that money for operations. So next year, and next year only, we're getting 100% of the food and beverage tax, and that equals about $2,200,000 that will be coming to Ashland Parks and Recreation to fund operations, like taking care of the parks and things like that. The city also transfers money from city property taxes to Ashland Parks and Recreation. And in a normal year, it'd be somewhere around $5,500,000, which is actually sounds like a lot, but it's less than we used to get. If we were on the same track as we usually would be without the reductions that have happened, it'd be over $6 million a year. And next year will be $3,500,000, because of the money that's coming in from the food and beverage as well. Those two are working together to get over that $5.5 million. Bottom line is our budget is around $7.5 million a year. And that funds everything from parks operations for all 18 developed parks, plus 500 acres of open space, 50 miles of trails, the swimming pool, the ice rink, the golf course, the senior services division, the nature center, all the different programs that we have it's all covered within that. And there's various resources where the money comes from. Now, the budget has been approved, and it's a smaller budget than we're used to, but we realize that we're all in the same boat, and we don't want to, so we're working together with the city, and the rate was reduced, how much money Parks and Recreation gets relative to what all, you know, the rest of the city departments get. And just recently, though, and that's what I explained to you, that 7.5 is actually a reduced amount. So what happened recently, however, is the city manager has informed us that we need to present a possibility for a 5% or a 10% cut to our revenues in the general fund. And that revenue in the general fund, like I said, was $3.5 million. So we presented that information to the Parks Commission a few weeks ago, or actually it was in the last month that I presented that. And it was things like, now, and of course, all of the departments have to do this as well. They're looking at cuts as well. Police and fire are only looking at 5%, or everybody else who has general fund dollars is looking at 5 and 10%. And we were looking at things like equipment replacement, training. We lost one person here at the Senior Services Division. That position is probably going to stay vacant. And Parks and Recreation, looking at the potential reduction of one FTE or full-time equivalent in parks and or recreation, you know, half and half or just one person from either. And then also looking at furloughs for management level employees. And with that, we could get up to the 10% of the $3.5 million, which is $350,000. However, just recently we were told that it's not just the general fund dollars that are in question or could be reduced. Now, when the memo came out, it was very clear that it was just general fund dollars. Enterprise funds are those like the water department. If they're charging for water services, those are enterprise funds. They don't go into the general fund. They just go back to the water department so they can continue to provide water to the citizens of Ashland. Those didn't count. Those weren't being looked at, because there wasn't a crisis or isn't a crisis with enterprise funds. But we were informed that although parks, the food and beverage is kind of like an enterprise fund, because only parks or streets can get the money according to the ordinance, we were informed that we do need to cut 5 or 10% of that as well, which brings our total up to about $550,000, or just over $550,000. For our 10% cut, if we have to go that high. And then I'm going to cut it short, and I'll answer questions here. If we do have to get up to the 5 or the 10%, we do have to cut $550,000. Most likely, we will be looking at programs that have to be cut. I know there's a commissioner here, and he's going to be the one who tells me, and the 5 are going to be the ones who tell me, but I'm going to tell them that we can't cut $550,000 and still keep the same level of services that we have right now. It's not possible. We're already at a reduced rate as far as our revenues go. Cutting more is going to have an impact. And it could be everything that I mentioned earlier, plus another $250,000, which could be an entire program, the general fund portion of an entire program, or it could be portions of a program, portions of one program and another program and another program to come up with $250,000. It's likely going to affect recreation. I won't get into the specifics, but it could be parks, it could be recreation. I think the priority for parks and recreation is parks. Recreation is important and we want to continue to do it. But we can bring recreation back when we have more funding. We can't bring parks back once we lose them, or it's very expensive to bring a park back once you lose it. Just look at Lincoln Elementary School and how bad that is now, and what it would take to bring that back up to what it should be because of the negligence there. So we're going through the process of doing all of this stuff. I don't agree with the cuts to the food and beverage, and I've informed the city manager that I don't agree with those. I guess I'll get my chance to tell the city council when we get to talk to the city council
But we're on board, and we've always been on board with being team players, and we understand that the city council can cut our revenues. It's not our decision how much revenue we get, but once the revenue comes to us, it is the commissioner's job to decide how that revenue is spent. So we're looking at May 23rd for the city council discussion. That's when it's going to start. There's other things too, but I don't need to bring those up here. Are circling around this and could affect this whole thing as well. But I'm just going to, I'll leave it there. We have to answer questions if there's any questions.
Do you, okay, go ahead, Ann.
Well, I'm a little confused about the feeling that 10% might be what has to happen. And it's kind of based on the class that I was in with Allison, where she basically said the sky is not falling, we have to make some cuts, but nothing at that level was indicated as being, you know, the things were not that severe. Has anything changed? Steph, maybe? Maybe you can respond to that? I mean, is 10% like we're going to have to do 10%, or is that just one of those exercises that people go through?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. You know, what I understand from the city manager is that he views using food and beverage money for maintenance isn't appropriate. I think there was a time when we asked citizens if it could be used for major projects, and I believe they said yes. But I believe he feels that it should go to the voters if they want to use that money in a different way. So there's that. We're in the middle of negotiations, or we're going to start negotiations really with a different union. And so some of the unions, Parks is not one of them, where they're represented by a union, and we have to agree or go to arbitration. So, and going to arbitration is usually means that if you're at the bottom of the offer, it's going to be a higher offer through arbitration. So there's that coming up. The 23rd and 24th we're meeting to look at what each department is requiring. The other thing that we've done is there's a survey that's going out that will be asking citizens what they think is most important. And it will also look at whether or not there's any a possibility of raising revenue versus just cuts.
Does that include Parks offerings as well, that survey?
You know, I have not seen, I asked for it too. I don't know what it actually, in the end, is covering. I haven't seen it.
When is it coming out?
It was supposed to be coming out in May.
To be fielded or to have people look at it?
Well, I haven't looked at it. So
aren't you on the committee?
Well, I'm on the council.
Well,
the council
was involved.
Who's doing this? It's from the college. Yeah.
But I guess
so. You. Who is the person?
Who is directing?
I think that I think Tanya probably is.
I think Ann's question is who from the council, isn't there a council subcommittee that's working with the university?
There is. I'm actually on the council subcommittee,
okay.
But we haven't really met that much in terms of, we gave information to SOU prior to the survey being developed about what we wanted it to include. But I have not seen the survey, and they have not
there hasn't been another subcommittee meeting to look at what they produced. And that was going to happen before it went to the public. It was hoped to be done by June.
And that's you and Paula Hyatt and
mm-hmm.
Tina who came?
Yeah.
I heard that there was a focus group kind of thing going on with the survey, so I'm surprised that it's going out for focus groups if you haven't been involved.
We did have some meetings about what should be on it. It's mostly that I haven't seen it, so I can't say how closely it follows what was wanted initially by the committee. They wanted it only to be two pages, so it was only one piece of paper. They wanted to have do you like this pot of ideas, or do you like these ideas better in terms of cuts or in terms of what you support?
Just to be clear, so that would be for the future, like not this coming year.
No,
it'd be for the next biennium.
It isn't for this next year. That's not what it's for. And it's for the general fund. It's not really for specific funds. It's a general fund budget survey.
Well, it seems like that could drive the food and beverage tax question. I can't imagine how there's only a certain amount of money.
Can I say something about the food and beverage sort of really
sure.
quick? Because it wasn't Parks and Recreation who decided to use the food and beverage for our funding source. The charter actually says that Ashland Parks and Recreation will be funded through a levy through property taxes up to a certain amount. And that's where our funding source is actually from. The city council over time, has it's been $2.09 per thousand, and then it was reduced to $1.89. And then to help out with this current budget crisis, they decided to change it again and make it so that it was a certain amount of general fund dollars from property taxes and a certain amount of food and beverage. And the reason why the city did that was because the city interpreted it to the language of the ordinance to state or to support that money coming to Ashland Parks and Recreation, including the senior services and everything else. And the reason why is because the language says that the money should be used by Parks and Recreation for maintenance, rehabilitation, blah, 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 those types of things. So it's very, I think it's very clear in the language that what we do day to day, maintenance and rehabilitation of parks, is covered in that. And so I think it gets lost to a lot of people who are hearing this discussion that Parks and Recreation took that money and started using it for purposes that were unintended based on the city manager's current interpretation. That's not exactly true. The city council discussed that matter and may have had recommendations from the city attorney, the city manager at the time, which was Adam Hanks,
right.
and the finance director at the time. And all three of them recommended to use the money that way in the budget. And then after the budget, a separate process was undertaken, and there was a decision by the city council to dedicate those funds to Ashland Parks and Recreation for this next year. I do disagree with the city manager in his interpretation. I have, again, informed him that, but it appears that that narrative is already being put out there as going leading up to a recommendation that the city manager to the city council to take that money from Ashland Parks and Recreation from that we were getting from food and beverage. So
showdown is okay, Corral. Jim, do you have anything you want to add? Because we're going to need to kind of wrap this up.
No. Michael's covered everything at a lower level of detail than I would have cared to mention, and I don't, that's good, I'm glad you mentioned it, but because he's the one that's in the detail. I'll just say it's a moving target, and it's changing weekly, so I was on the budget committee that approved and recommended to the council that funding stream that has since been whittled down would get us through this buy-in. We'd get Parks through the buy-in, and I wasn't Parks then, but I am now. So I understand the genesis of the confusion and discussion, but it's not resolved yet.
It's, I think initially there was wastewater treatment involved with that, which is the deficit for that is being paid off. So.
Well, it's already retired.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's no longer in the mix.
Right. That's what.
So
that's another factor. But you have a different you have different counselors now, and their priorities may be different than previous council majorities. And you also have a different interpretation, as been explained by the city manager, in terms of what he believes that money should be used for.
So really we're depending on the city council to defend Park and Rec, I think, in a way, but we'll see what happens on May 23rd.
Well, and the last thing I'll say, the big question, Steph, is if there is a general fund crisis and we are cutting money out of all the general fund departments, including Parks and Rec, to backfill or to make up for the deficit in the general fund, taking the food and beverage money away from Parks and Recreation will only exacerbate that by $2 million. Okay. Because we just don't get funded those $2 million. I mean, that's the real scary part of this whole thing is, there's not enough money to go around, and this was a really good opportunity to use food and beverage because it did appear to be supported. The language did support it. And it was the same council as now who approved that. So it'll be unfortunate, but I guess it isn't our decision, it's the city council's decision. And there are other interpretations, and I hope that we get a chance to talk about that.
A number of years ago, money was taken from the reserve fund of parks. And at that time, some folks felt like we had been told, parks had been told to have a reserve fund by Brian Almquist, who was there at the time as the city manager. And at that time, I think the parks department actually looked into getting a lawyer to try to have an independent opinion of that decision. But basically, since around a lot of that changed in the 1990s, I think, the parks has been in a harder decision. And you know that the other kinds of options are things like levies and a separate park district, which is what some cities have done.
Yeah. So I suggest, since we need to wrap this discussion up, that that we all pay attention to the May 23rd, 24th discussions that the city's going to have. I don't think it's open to the public, but that's kind of where
I think everything is open to the public. In terms of being able to view it.
Yeah.
Is it going to be a Zoom meeting?
I don't know what it's going to be, but it's definitely going to be viewable.
It's a public meeting.
It's during the day.
They're all public meetings.
I think.
But we can advocate to the council before the meeting.
During the meeting.
I guess I'm concerned when I see that we have the program with no real revenue stream and a big chunk of what could be up for grabs from parks. And so I have a concern that, we want to make sure that the senior program is retained, and of course there's a lot of other things we'd like to have retained as well.
Yeah, but that's a good point, because of the heavy subsidization from APRC to this particular program, it's dramatic when there's major cuts to the overall budget, and you start looking at what can be funded through revenues and what's subsidized. And so it's a major concern for sure. So we could talk for hours on this subject. So I think that was just kind of, I appreciate Michael coming to the meeting and Steph's input, and then, you know, we always want to have input from the commission, council, and any administration that we have. But let's wrap that up and let's move to standing reports. I'll turn it over to Eileen or to Natalie.
Okay. Very quickly, our educational presentation this month is our wonderful Angelegia on Wednesday on the Sense of Touch. We're scheduled for March.
Free massages for everyone.
Yes. Self-massage. The critical part there. So, but it's our first second in-person that we've done in 2 years. So we had one last month that was pretty well attended. From the Alzheimer's Association, the sign-ups are really healthy for this time around, so we're definitely happy to be back, so thank you, Anne. And then in June and July, we have focused on more social and cultural events, or annual Icebreak Social, and Brit is back with their outreach program, and doing a little earlier to try to avoid smoke, so we'll be offering those for our community in June and July, and might be fewer educational offerings if there's something social planned that month due to staffing changes. But everything is going well so far with people coming back heavily and using our services. Thank you.
Okay, now I think. Thanks.
Well, I think Michael's words and Natalie's have primed you for one of my focuses, which is about our change in staffing. We lost our office assistant in late March, and there was a hiring freeze with the city, and the budget situation makes it highly unlikely that we would be able to refill that position. Just so you know, in the last round of cuts, because this is not the beginning of cuts for Parks and Rec, we've been, you know, with COVID and everything else, things have been already shrinking. Our office assistant was just barely spared in that, where three others were cut, and now it's our turn, basically. So Natalie and I have been doing a lot of adjusting. I have to acknowledge Kathy, and I'm going to embarrass her, but Kathy offered to help us, and she's been coming in our office. She started out coming 20 hours a week. Now she's down to a mere 16. And it's been truly life-saving. I think you all know how difficult it was for us in March and through a lot of April, and having Kathy there has made all the difference in the world. So, but we've been working with volunteers, and we can't keep Kathy that many hours permanently, darn. but we've got a couple other volunteers helping us one day a week, and we're just trying to limp along. But where Natalie and I landed, we don't want to cut activities for our seniors, but some things like, okay, we're doing a big social event, so we're not going to do an education event that month. We're just going to have to try to piece things together a little differently, where we've been in a growth mode and adding big, exciting, super labor-intensive projects like our senior volunteer fair that we did that was incredible, but those are really big add-ons for us. So those are some of the places that we're shrinking, and we have made a very big decision that we're going to be closing on Fridays. So the staff will still be here, but with us being pulled into front office and answering the phone, it's wonderful. It's actually really helped to have volunteers answering the phone, but the more we do of answering the walk-ins and the phones, the less we can do the other work that it takes to run and plan and create everything that we offer here. So Friday will become our day to, like, let me catch up and get all that stuff in place for what's coming up. It kind of converged that one of our Friday programs had already moved to Thursday, and we're moving our weekly movie to Tuesday so that we don't actually cut anything. And then Owen Archiba, our Medicare counseling, has been staying on the phone as it has been all through COVID. So those were, we just had very full Fridays, but we've kind of figured it all out. A little odd thing is that Food and Friends will still serve lunch, and because it just doesn't work for them to cut back. They still need to stage all those lunches that go out into the community. So they will be responsible to unlock the front door from 11 to 1 and lock it back up and do a walkthrough the way we would do. But most of the time we'll have at least one of us in the building to double check that, and that, you know, we're here for emergencies, but we won't be in here. So that's the really big news about that change. We also backed out of hosting an OHSU student because that was going starting out right when everything fell apart. So the other little exciting on a positive note, memory of Mike Hirsch, we have started a little mini food pantry, and you might want to take a peek at it. It's just on the other side of that that painting there on the other side of the wall. We always had had some food, but now we have a dedicated shelf, and there Davis, who actually is the paid employee of Food and Friends, she is coordinating with the food bank, and thank you to Steph for helping open those doors and set up those connections. So that's really exciting, and I can tell the seniors are really appreciating that. We have seniors of all economic levels who use the senior center, but we are probably a little more heavily represented on the lower income seniors who need that help with housing and education and food security. So that's been an exciting way to memorialize Mike and offer a little more to our community. And it's pretty much self-served the way our library is. You know, take what you need in the library, bring back if you want, you know. But people are being really good. They take a bag. Nobody cleans off the shelf. I'll just take a little bit. Bag gets pretty heavy if you overshop. So that's been really great. And I just mentioned one last thing, which is that, we should have mentioned that Corey couldn't be here today. She's been out of the country for a couple months and just coming back today, I think. She would have joined us if it had been on Zoom, but since we're in person. So she'll be back, but we are now down a member, and just one member. So, in fact, I've reached out to Noriko. I don't want to put you on the spot to answer, but you're one of the people on our list we'd love to recruit, or if somebody has other ideas, please speak to me or Anne, some kind of an informal membership chair. Very informally, not really, but either of us would take those suggestions. Tends to take some personal outreach to bring people on board. I did not, thank you. June 1st is when we will be closed on Friday. So we wanted to wait so we could put it in our newsletter. We didn't want to do it right away.
Okay. Just a comment, which is the contraction of services, from the community's perspective, it's like things like the volunteer fair, which really publicly showcases the senior program. The contraction actually works against the value of the program because it becomes very insular to, mm-hmm. you know. So that's my concern, you know, where it becomes a, what do you call it, self-perpetuating problem.
Right.
So, I mean, we just need to be aware that you are capable of doing a lot more, but only if you have funding.
And I'm not going to say we'll never do those things.
Oh, I know.
But
yeah.
Maybe there will be a time that we can have enough staff time to organize enough volunteer help to make that happen.
Right.
But you usually don't get a volunteer who will carry the full weight of organizing. Or a partnership. That was a big partnership.
Yeah,
but it took a huge amount of staff.
Right.
Okay. Can we squeeze in livable Ashland Lines update?
I'll make this quick. The big deal is that we have submitted our assessment and updating to AARP, to Oregon AARP, and that we are scheduled to do an update for PARC, for the PARC Rec Commission, and we, I don't think we're scheduled yet for the city, but we, you have a request.
Myself and Gina have requested.
Yeah, there's a request. So, from my standpoint, this was a huge hurdle. And we're continuing to meet every other month with the groups, and we talk about, you know, where we can provide some synergy, groups working together, that kind of thing. And you want to add?
Just, I just don't remember if I distributed a copy of it to ASAC members, and I may not have. I know I sent it to the council and the commissioners and Michael. I just don't know. Do any of you?
I don't think you did.
Okay. Well, certainly.
You'll probably get that one.
Right. Okay.
And just to say, the survey that we were using as the basis of our evaluation, our needs assessment, seems to me to define the priorities and the values of people in Ashland in a much more robust way than I think this survey is going to do. So just my editorializing.
There you go. Okay. Thank you for that. Any other items from ASAC members that we didn't cover today? So our next meeting will be July 11th. I think we'll plan on having it in this setting. So if for some reason we need to change it, it's easier to change back from a live setting to Zoom. So we'll plan on Ashland Senior Center meeting on July 11th. It'll be interesting because there'll be probably some budget information available for the coming year. So, you know, we might want to once again make just budget information, even if it's just an information piece for this group, just out of curiosity more than anything. So, seeing no other requests or anything, I'm going to use the gavel. Thank you very much for having us. See you guys later.